It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alpha, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies feline with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Welcome into the show. We had a bit of a chaotic scene to end the last show. Anytime food comes into the vicinity, everyone loses all sense, and mostly this is directed at Lance Zierlein. I know he lost all sense beyond the fact that he couldn't stay in a seat while the show was going on. Is he prioritized moving out and collecting his burger before anyone could see it, and sequestering in his office and leaving his car keys in the room. If you're looking at the show, watching us on stream, whether it be Twitch or Twitter or YouTube, you can see me holding up his car keys. The burger was more important. The fries were more important, thanks to Trill Burgers for bringing that in, than his ability to get home. So we'll see if he notices that the one thing that can get him into his car and to his home is absent.
I think we run a social experiment.
Yeah.
Just leave him there.
I'm just going to leave him there.
I'll tell Paul to just leave him there.
I mean, if he gets into the Paul show, if we're talking 2 hours later and he still doesn't know.
I mean, he already had lunch.
True. So he wouldn't have to leave for lunch because he's already had it.
I'm sure there's some NFL draft prospects to break down.
Maybe
a podcast
he has to do with the NFL.com people. So it's possible he doesn't notice that his keys are no longer on his person. We will see. I'm not notifying him. If I see him in his office and he's not panicked, I'm not going to say anything. If he's panicked looking for his keys, I'll say, okay, the keys are in here. I'm not going to torture him. But if he's just doing his stuff and not even looking to leave, nah, we'll just leave him in here until he figures it out. Until it's time to go home.
Until he's earned them.
Yeah. We started yesterday's show with a question of fandom for Sean. The Aggies and the Horns matched up again. As I said, the rivalry had been renewed in the SEC tournament. The Aggies were down for quite a bit in that second half, found a way to come back, and the game went to two overtimes. I got to admit, when it was like 78-73, A&M up, I thought the game was over. I was like, all right, I had my lunch. Time to take my requisite mid-afternoon nap. I wake up 30 minutes later, which is short for me when it comes to a nap at this point, and the Horns have won. So the question yesterday was about Sean and his willingness to root for his Horns, knowing the implications, knowing he'd have to work more hours today, knowing Roddy Terry may have saved his job.
I'd have to work more hour today.
Yeah, true.
I was only really losing
more
an hour.
Yes, that's correct. Roddy Terry may save his job, and Joe Lunardi has the Horns after their big double overtime win against the Aggies yesterday as the last team in. Of course, there are bit Steelers all around.
Last team in.
So
last team in.
Winning today would certainly further their cause, because you never know when a one bid league turns into a two bid league, or someone who was never going to make the tournament makes it because if they go on a run. So the Horns aren't safe, but at the moment, because of their big win over the Aggies, they are in. Sean was non-committal about what he was going to hope for. He comes in today with the Glory Days hat, the Texas USC Rose Bowl hat. And is that a burnt orange Texas shirt as well?
Yes.
So we know that all it took was watching that maroon and white go down in defeat to get the Longhorn blood boiling again and say, you know what? That's right.
I'm
a full Longhorn, and I'm thrilled with the win and what it could mean for our tournament chances.
All it took was for them to be up by like 10, I'd say, in the first half. And then I think the Aggies cut it to like 5 at halftime. And I was like, oof, that sucks. And then I was like, you know what? I think I just made my decision for me.
Yeah, let's go out and win it, boys.
And yeah, they cut it to 6 at halftime. And I was I was disappointed because it's the fine margins, Dale. That's where these games are won and lost.
You want to win the last 4 of the first half and the first 4 of the second half.
Exactly.
And you didn't close out strong and you thought it could lead to bad things. And then, almost did.
Yes, and that's when I realized, oh, I'm willing to work one extra hour on Friday.
As long as my horns can.
To secure a win here.
Yeah, and they got it. I want to point out Tremont Mark to get the game to overtime. He's at the top of the key, former Coug. We'll get to the Cougs, who they beat Colorado in a game where, according to the oddsmakers, they underperformed. They were a giant favorite, won that game by 9. But Tremont Mark's at the top, above the arc, isolated, and just a giant bust by an Aggie big. He lost sight of the horn big under the rim, pretty much. Got an easy dunk. That tied the game. It was just a bust. I don't know where he thought he should be, but his eyes were not on his man. There was not a lot. It was ball watching by him, not of awareness of his man, and led to an open dunk for the horns, and they tied the game. And then a desperation shot by the Aggies doesn't go in. They go to overtime, double overtime, and the horns get a win. So we will see if they need one more, or things will play out. Where a loss this today doesn't matter. But at this point, Lenardi and is saying Rodney Terry's club is back in the field of 68.
By the way, they're not winning today.
You didn't think they were winning
yesterday
either.
Yes, but they've now played a double overtime game against a team that's been on a double bye. That's also way better.
Don't doubt Rodney Terry's horns. That's all I'll say.
I you know what? I'm not doubting Rick Barnes's volunteers.
It is an interesting thing going on here. Rick Barnes and his team in a tournament setting versus Rodney Terry and his team in a tournament setting.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think we can call it January, February Terry now. Move over, Tom Izzo.
Okay.
What have you ever done?
He does have
nothing.
He does have that one national title way back when.
Yeah, he's
25
recruiting
years
guys
ago.
whose parents weren't even, or whose parents were in high school when that happened.
It's true.
He literally has Jason Richardson's kid on his team.
We're gonna get to a legacy, kind of a player. He's not the son of a NBA player. He is the younger brother of an NBA player. And Sean, I'm gonna need you to think, because we'll get to this at some point. Who is the most likely younger brother of a 2025 NBA All-Star to start a fight in the handshake line after his final high school game? Because that happened. Think of all the guys who made the All-Star team.
Okay.
And think who most likely has a younger brother who would start a shoving match after his final game in the handshake line. We'll get to that.
Yes, but I'll ruminate.
You'll think about the All-Star roster of a weekend you didn't watch.
I'd be like, Team Shaq, Team Kenny, give me a hint, please. Is he a rising star?
No hints.
Okay.
Just go to Wiki. I'll say this, he's not a rising star.
Okay, so it's not.
He's not the younger brother of a rising
there's
star.
There's not a Min Thompson, a
Reed
Sar
Shepherd's
Thompson.
Shepherd's younger brother did not start a fight. No.
Okay.
But think about it, and we will see what you come up with. We got an interesting thing going on in Dallas, if you want to call it a thing, between DeMarcus Lawrence and Micah Parsons. We'll get to that in the show as well. By the way, Lou Ferrigno should be joining us at right around 11:30, I believe. The email I got said he'd arrive at 11:15. I don't think he's going to immediately come on, so we should have not Sean's Hulk, but the original Hulk, at least for me. He'll be in, and I did not know this, but I found out he voiced the Hulk in some ways in Thor Ragnarok. I say in some ways because if you watch that movie, that was the advent of full sentences Hulk. That wasn't Lou Ferrigno, but he did voice Hulk initially in that movie, or at least parts of that movie. So we'll hear from him. He's in town for a convention. And also Michael Carroll will join us as well. We'll move the schedule around and get Michael Carroll his full segment so he can recommend things for you to watch or not to watch. But getting to the Cougs, I did mention them in passing. Scrappy win. Expected to beat Colorado. you avoided disaster, and when you win that game. But the problem is Juwan Roberts gets hurt. He has a sprained ankle. It's not the only prominent ankle to have been injured yesterday. When we were doing the show and as we were heading out, Cooper Flagg injured his ankle. He's unlikely to play in their semifinal game. Duke did hold on to win because when we left, they were trailing by, I think, 5 or so at halftime. They went on to win that game against Georgia Tech. Cooper Flagg's unlikely to play. We'll see what his prognosis is for the rest of Duke's postseason run. But Juwan Roberts, not a great thing considering the Cougs' history of guys just getting hurt. Tremont Mark, a guy I mentioned playing for the Longhorns, he got hurt in a season where the Cougs had real aspirations of winning a national title. Juwan thinks he's going to be able to go today. Question is, will the team doctors agree with him? Player can say whatever they wants, and that's right after the game. What happens when swelling hits and you have a night of sleep? How does it respond? If he's good to go, play him, but if there's any concern, don't. Pretty simple to me. Pretty simple to me as far as what should happen. I'm not going to tell a guy or suggest a guy that can play to not play if he's not going to reaggravate anything and he's going to be fine. I just don't know the extent of that ankle. So that's something to look out for as the Cougs try to avoid the thing that's kind of hampered them throughout the most recent run for Kelvin Sampson. Just guys getting banged up. It's part of sports. Guys get hurt. The Cougs have had their share of it and probably more of their share of it. Juwan Roberts, a very important member of that team. You know what Kelvin Sampson thinks of him if you saw Senior Day where Juwan Roberts walking out caused Kelvin Sampson to cry. So he's a big-time part of that team, a leader. Just protect it. If you got to protect the kid from himself, cool. But if he's good, play him. As I don't really agree with what the guy said this morning about it, the Big 12 tournament doesn't matter. I don't think competitors think that way. Understood. They've won all they can win as far as conference titles are concerned. When we talk about Kelvin Sampson's time there from the American regular season and tournaments, they won a Big 12 regular season title. They've pretty much done whatever you can accomplish in the regular season. The final goal, sure, win a national title, but let's not pretend like raising that trophy wouldn't be fun too. Cutting down the nets for the Big 12 tournament title in your second year in the program, second year in the conference, that'd be pretty fun too. I think the mission, if you set it out before them, was before the year, would be win the regular season title, win the Big 12 tournament title, then win the national title. If this is part of their mission, go out there and win it, but clearly not at the expense of one of your more important players. So we'll see how that's handled. They got BYU, high-scoring BYU. They put, 96 on Iowa State yesterday? Don't expect that to happen today. It's not exactly the Cougs formula to get into a high-scoring game and against anybody. But that's a top 25 matchup. BYU has adjusted well to the Big 12. Not as good as the Cougs, because I don't know how you could expect anyone to do what the Cougs have done, but it's a good one. That's at 6 p.m. on ESPN. You can check that out. It's March Madness season. Sean's caught the fever. All it took was one half against A&M for him to be all in on March Madness.
All it took, 8-point lead.
1 8-point lead.
8-point lead with, little did I know, like 35 minutes of actual basketball left.
Yeah, it was a long one. And
2 hours of my life left.
Hey, it was well spent. You got to see a win. And you were invested, so all that talk yesterday, out the window. Now we got a chance to win something. Unlikely as it may
be. Yeah, I just, like, this is where I'm at with Rodney Terry, Texas basketball. I need to see it. I just need to see. This is a team that lost to South Carolina.
Yeah, no expectations.
This is literally the worst team in the SEC they lost to.
South Carolina owns Texas basketball. The women...
Yeah,
get owned by South Carolina, yeah. And the men, for whatever reason, lost to this version of South Carolina. That was embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's been a tough year, but now you're 19-14. Lenardi
last team in.
Let's make sure you get into the top part of that last four in by beating Tennessee today. And last you get to beat Rick
in.
Barnes.
Last team in.
Do you want to, like, the selection
be
show?
Be the last team
the
in?
Election, no. The selection show doesn't say, oh, Texas is the last team in when they make the announcement of the matchup. But after all the brackets are filled out, then they go and tell you who the committee said was the final couple teams. Do you actually, as long as you make it in, do you actually want to be labeled the last team in? You want to be, I guess, in draft terms, irrelevant, Mr. Irrelevant?
I mean, the ultimate Cinderella, Texas basketball.
That's what everyone thinks when they think Cinderella, yes.
Well, the last four at-larges play in the first four.
Yeah, so right now you're scheduled to play in the first four.
Yeah, you'd be playing.
You want to see Texas and Dayton? Is that what you're looking for?
No, not really.
No, so
Can't say I do.
That's not... Yes, the 68 has been a thing for a while, but no one feels like that's the real tournament.
No, I think I've watched... I think I maybe watched like one half of one game of those every year. Like, sorry, 16 seeds. I actually think it's messed up that they make the 16
seeds. Yeah,
I don't
think that's
fair. That.
As the two, as teams who win their tournament and automatically qualify,
you should play a one seed.
You should be able to play on site at the tournament, not in Dayton.
Yeah, I think it should just be like the final eight.
All the final eight. Yeah, yeah, eight at large is have to play that. Yeah, I wouldn't mind that.
What was the question? Oh, Dayton, not excited. Just if you're asking me about, are you excited about Dayton, Ohio? No.
And watching your team play?
No. That. Next question.
So you need this win, or you're going
to. I don't need this win.
Well, if your team is going to make the tournament either way, because no one takes their bid later in the week or over the weekend.
Also, what's Lenardi smoking with the last team in? Or like a team ahead of him is North Carolina, who's 1-11 in quad one games.
I'm just.
They played
11 or 12 quad one games.
So did Texas.
And how many did Texas win?
Six. They played in the SEC. So if you beat anyone in the SEC, that's a quad one win.
Talk to Lenardi. He just has you as the last team in.
Bum.
Does he? And Carolina is not even. Aren't they the last four in?
Yes, they're in the last four.
So Texas and Carolina could possibly play each other in a game in Dayton.
Yeah. Rodney Terry.
Big ratings.
Versus Hubert Davis.
Loser goes home.
I actually don't think Hubert Davis goes home.
Rodney Terry. Losing in Dayton.
Gosh.
Could go home.
I hope we don't Kevin Keats this. I hope we don't poor man's Kevin Keats this.
Yeah, if you're going to Kevin Keats, it'd make the Final Four.
Exactly.
But don't make the Sweet 16 and get beat down.
They already kind of did that when he was the interim coach and they made the Elite Eight.
That was poor man's.
That was kind of what
Kevin
they did.
Keats, and Coach L got in the way. By the way, Rodney Terry, 13-point lead in the second half of that game.
I know. And a guy who can't win in the transfer portal era beat him with a team full of transfers.
Well, he couldn't win the last 2 years in the transfer portal era. The two previous years, he used the transfer portal to get to the Elite Eight.
People
and Final
are lucky,
Four.
Or Jim Larrañaga. Larrañaga,
yeah.
Is lucky that no one cares about Miami basketball because him trying to get that off, that like, man, transfer portal's crazy. It's like, just because you retire in the middle of the season doesn't mean you can say the transfer portal's crazy when your biggest success at the school you're retiring from is the direct result of the transfer portal.
The game passed him by pretty quickly.
Yeah,
in two years. Really all it was is he whiffed on the guys. He tried to get the follow-up. The great runs he had in 2 years in a row. Yeah. He
and John Rui's life wallet.
No, they were able to pay for. Oh, okay. They were able to pay for guys. They just paid the wrong guys.
I thought they defaulted.
No. The guys got their money. They just didn't play well, and that happened at Florida State. A couple of years, they were big hits. Jared Verse and Braden Fisk turned into NFL prospects and got drafted by the Rams. Big hits in the transfer portal.
DJU, not so much,
and others. That's why they're awful. This past season, it's hit or miss for some teams. That's why it's probably not a great idea, particularly in college football, to base your entire foundation on the transfer portal. Unless there's some top pick at quarterback in the draft.
Yeah, I was going to say, unless you're Lincoln Riley just taking the best Oklahoma players with you.
Yes. That's a unique situation. And even that didn't turn out great the last couple
congrats,
years.
Congrats, you didn't win a conference.
Didn't win a thing. Didn't win a big bowl game. Lost in your conference final or conference title game. But that's the Lincoln Riley experience. Oklahoma fans, despite their own issues, get a laugh out of that. Okay, we will come back with more. We'll talk about what happened in Palm Beach, West Palm Beach. We had our first incident in the outfield. It's bound to happen. We'll talk about that. That'll be part of our camp update. As I mentioned, we'll get to – when we get to the second hour, we'll have Michael Carroll, and we'll also have Lou Ferrigno. And the Texans are restructuring, opening up more money, and they made an addition to their offensive line. So we'll get to that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Get in earlier, so whenever that's figured out, I'll let you know. Probably won't be 11:30 though. All right, so the Texans made an acquisition of Ed Ingram. They traded a third day pick, I believe what a sixth rounder, to the Vikings for him. He wasn't great last year. The Viking fans are like, "What? Someone gave us a pick for him? That's never a good feeling. It's never a good feeling when the team you're trading with fans are like, oh, I can't believe we got something for him, and they're calling their general manager the GOAT because they were able to dump a guy who's not good. He and their other acquisition, Laken Tomlinson, ranked pretty highly in giving up pressures last year. Not great. I don't know exactly what the plan is other than, hey, they got to be better than Shaq Mason and the combination of Juice Patterson. If you don't know, this show knows that they're two different people. It's just easier if we just combine them into one. Juice Patterson.
When it's necessary, we will differentiate. But
right
when
now,
we're talking about the offensive line group as a whole, it's Juice Patterson.
Yes, right now, Juice Patterson. One of them may play guard. One of them may play center. Right now, as Aaron Wilson reported, before the Ed Ingram acquisition, it was Tomlinson at guard, Patterson or Scruggs at center, and then Blake Fisher at right, Titus at left, and an opening for guard. And maybe that opening has been filled by Ed Ingram. I don't like it. I'll just say that right now. I don't think they are. I think they're less talented, even as bad as Shaq Mason was. I do think in a vacuum, there goes my phone, I think he's a better player than Ed Ingram. It went poorly last year, so if he's a better player someplace else or he was a better player in New England, that doesn't matter for the Texans' purposes. They are less talented in that room, and that's clearly because Laremy Tunsil was not there, but even the fill-ins.
Yeah, even taking out the Tunsil part of it, because you're not going to get like more talented
after trading Tunsil. That level of player.
I think that, to me, the Ingram trade, it's the reverse of the Kenyon Green trade, where you're like, oh, someone wanted Kenyon Green. All right. And that's the same thing where Vikings fans are, oh, someone wanted. And
Nick Caserio's the GOAT.
Yeah.
Because we got Chauncey Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah. I think we literally said, like, they turned Kenyon Green
into viable
low-level picks onto someone who's going to start for your defense.
Yeah.
That's why either Tomlinson or Ingram, one of these guys has to be a rotation or a bench guy or a, you know, camp competition guy. Like, there's no way that these are the starter. Like, this can't be the starting moves.
So you think it comes through the draft? Because
they got to draft somebody.
They have to draft a guy they want to win one of those spots. Now, whether he wins it or not, that's up to the competition.
Yeah.
But there should be a guy who they believe is the prohibitive favorite for one of those.
Yeah,
spots.
I'm saying they need more like talent, just more just raw talent in there, because like when Ian Rappaport, what was the exact verbiage on the tweet? But when Ian Rappaport reports a trade, you can often tell how good a guy is just by the accolades that he throws in there. And the Vikings traded guard Ed Ingram. To the Texans, sources say, as Houston continues to rework their offensive line, and here's the part that gives away that he might not be that good. The second round pick from LSU is on the move, thanks in part to Minnesota spending big on O-line and free agency. Whenever they throw in your draft status, and my evidence for this is look at how they reported Kenyon Green getting traded. It was former first-round pick Kenyon Green traded.
It's pretty much to justify him even talking about this trade.
Because
when people go, who's Kenyon Green?
This is why you might remember this name.
Yeah.
Hey, this is the pedigree that we're trading on.
There's a reason I'm mentioning it. And sure, it's not because of his level of play on the NFL level. It's because someone valued him at some point, and he's on the move.
Yes.
So Ed Ingram, former second-round pick. The Texans did acquire a guy that the Vikings at least thought was worth a early valuable pick. It just hasn't worked out. They went and spent money to fix their problem. I wish the Texans were capable of doing that, but they weren't. They just didn't have the money. They have a little bit more now because they've restructured Christian Kirk's deal, a guy they just picked up. It frees up $12 million in cap space for them. Does that mean I think they're going to go sign a Will Hernandez or something, a guard that's on the market right now? No, I just think it means it gives them money for their draft class. I think it helps them bring those guys in, and maybe there's a couple smaller deals on the table. They're just cap strapped. They've made a couple of deals to bring in guards. They need to go draft. I wouldn't be against drafting a couple.
Just
go draft a couple. If I don't know if it's going to be second and third round picks or a first round pick and a third round pick, but go get a couple guys wherever you get them that you think could go beat out Tomlinson or Ed Ingram.
Yeah, I mean if two guys want to start be better than these guys, that's all right with me. I think their draft picks would. They have a first, second, and two-thirds. Does that sound right?
I'll look up. We know they just acquired picks with Tunsil. They've made multiple trades. So I'll look up what their updated draft picks are right now. They've got, counting, they've got a two-thirds, a second, a first, no fourth,
okay.
A fifth, and two
sevens. So they have four picks in the first three rounds.
Correct. So
they need to spend half those on offensive line.
I would agree.
Just to get human bodies in there that are more talented or just have upside, I would guess. I would say than Laken Tomlinson and Ed Ingram, who I am viewing him as welcome back, Kenyon Green.
Hey,
new Kenyon Green. How's it going?
Hey, you know that Kendrick Green guy we have?
Yeah.
We just brought in another one.
This is the less confusing version of that.
Yes, so we don't have two guys with K and Green in their names. Two out of the first four, I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Yeah.
But I would say find a guy to lean on that's different from the guys you have leaned on when it comes to drafting offensive linemen. Go pick a different guy to lean on.
Whoever okayed the last couple.
Yeah. Pick a different guy. I'm not saying you got to get rid of that guy. Maybe his expertise shouldn't be in offensive line stuff. Maybe it should be at a different position, whether that be a scout or maybe it was an offensive line coach. Certainly, we know we have a new one who was part of the organization. If you want to lean on him as opposed to what you were leaning on in the past, I'm good with it. Just change up the evaluation process because it has been very underwhelming to this point under Caserio. But you got another opportunity. I hope they take advantage of it. Because right now, as much as they want to lean on and the sell job is the power of friendship, we got that guy out of the room, and I'm not against it. This is not me coming out saying they made a mistake. I get it. If he's bad for the room, get him out of the room. But you just can't say, well, as long as he's out, we're good to go. And to be fair to them, I don't think that's their approach. But they have signed a couple guys who – one's a journeyman older player, and the other is a washout that Minnesota didn't want to keep on their roster. That's not good enough for what the problem was last year. Or maybe Cole Popovich is Dante Scarnecchia reincarnate, and he's going to walk in there and turn these guys around. And look, I would have done this last year, but they didn't give me the chance because Strausser was above me. But now we're going to flip this room a little bit and turn all of you guys – into competent offensive linemen who can pick up a stunt. That's what we should be looking at. That one guy who found a clip of Ed Ingram going one-on-one against Jalen Carter, and said, look, Casario's done it again. Got a dog. It's like one play from Jalen Carter's rookie year. Ed Ingram's been a bad player for the most part. Find me the clips of him picking up stunts. Find me the clips of Lakin Thomason understanding line games by defensive linemen and picking them up and not being confused. If you have a two-minute compilation of them doing that well, then I'm pretty much sold because it's an improvement over what we saw last year. I don't care about the one-on-one stuff with Jalen Carter. Show me, hey, this front is playing games, TNs, looping blitzes, and these guys were competent at picking them up. And then I'm like, you know what? I'll take back my stuff about these guys not being that good. At least you saw something that is an improvement over what we had last year.
Yeah, I would be okay if their entire process is just like,
can you pick up a stunt?
Can you do this one thing?
Yeah. Okay, can you look great for work and be good at it? Don't just stand there and go help an offensive lineman who's actually doing his job and allow another guy to run by you for a sack?
Or it should be that, and then also, like, it should be a highlight reel where it's, you know, just over the top. Like one of those, you know, high school football mixtapes where, but it is just guys doing competent O-line. Like, you don't have to destroy guys. It's just literally picking up a stunt. And then also, hopefully, it's someone else that sacks the quarterback, someone else's responsibility that sacks the quarterback, you know, Lakin Thomason runs back, picks him up. That's all we need.
Just
pick up the quarterback.
When he was with, he's been a couple places now, but
Detroit
and the Jets as well, Lakin Thomason.
San Fran.
If Aaron Rodgers got hit a little late this past year,
just
have a little conversation with the guy who did it.
Yeah.
Hey, Greg Rousseau, you cut that out.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Hey.
Knock it off.
Enough funny business.
And you guys, hey, that's not asked for much. It is compared to what we saw last year.
Again, we're just looking for more than last year. Really, it's like, and this is something on the rundown we'll get to later. It's like what I'm asking from Jose Altuve in the outfield. No bloopers.
Well, he could not live up to that standard yesterday.
But for the Texans offensive line, it's like, hey, just don't be – if you're going to be bad in different ways.
Yeah, the problem is Lakin Thomason was on a team in Seattle who wasn't great protecting Geno Smith last year.
Yeah,
it wouldn't have been Greg Rousseau. It would have been like, hey, Bosa, leave Geno alone. That's all. If he put in that type of effort – I'd be like, improvement. Thank you, Casario.
Just get up and woof at him a little.
Anything. Give him a little shove. Something that says, you can't hit my quarterback as hard as
you're
you did.
You're just not going to punk us all game long, and we're not going to do anything about
it. Look, man, I can't keep you from hitting my quarterback during the legal part of the game. Yeah. But afterwards, get off of him in a quick fashion. Don't say anything to him. Let's go to the next play.
Yeah, we're going, hey, don't punk us all day long, and we're not going to stand up. Now it's punk us all day long, but we will stand up.
Yes.
That's all I'm asking.
Anything. Small increments of improvement is what we're looking for. And if that's what we get, cool. And then, of course, Casario, go do your work and go draft a couple guys who can actually beat these guys out. Okay, when we come back, we'll get to the camp report. Got word that Lou Ferrigno will join us at 11. So we'll talk to – he's not just a Hulk. He's done a lot of things. He was on King of Queens. I remember that. I had to be reminded of it when I was doing some research, but I was like, oh, yeah, he was a neighbor on King of Queens. So we'll talk to Lou Ferrigno in a little bit, and we'll get to our camp report when we come back. But first, we are going to talk about Monument Chevrolet. It's the place you go to when you want to be treated like family and get a great car. That's part of the deal. It is spring, which means spring savings on the Chevy Silverado 1500s. That's employee pricing that you're getting. You're getting the same price that their employees get, and if they kept employees around for years and years, you know they treat them right, and they're going to treat you right when it comes to getting a car. Whether it be a Chevy Silverado 1500 or something else like a Trax or a Blazer, it's all there for you at MonumentChevrolet.com. Check out the inventory, and once you see those prices don't change once you get up on the lot. There are no hidden fees, no upcharges. You get on that lot, you expect the price that got you to the lot, And they'll give that to you. Just head on out there. It's in Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225. And maybe you'll run into Sammy, salesperson of the week. Personable, friendly, kind, understands the car buying process is something that should be painful. He's going to walk you through it and get you in the car that you want. That's all it is to it. They're going to get you in the car that you want at the price that you want. So whether it be the pre-owned inventory with their 6 months, 6,000-mile warranty, or a new car, or maybe you just need some service done, it's all there for you out there in Pasadena. Remember, check them out at monumentchevrolet.com. Go on out there and check out all the vehicles on the lot. And also this, Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So, when we discuss the outfield of Cam Smith and Jose Altuve, we think to ourselves, at least this show does, we want to be entertained, but we're not really looking for bloopers. We just want Altuve and Cam Smith, whether that becomes an actual thing during the season, to provide something we wouldn't expect in the regular season. I don't know what that means for Altuve beyond what we saw yesterday. I hope that doesn't become the norm, but it's just something different. With Kyle Tucker not being around and Yordan, they don't want to play that much out there. You hope you get competent play. You hope you don't have anything embarrassing happen. And you hope Cam Smith becomes someone you can depend on in the lineup as they try to find a spot for him. We'll see how the rest of spring training goes. Well, we got our first, oh no, what's going on out there? From Altuve yesterday. If you missed it, he misplayed a fly ball. I won't say it's completely routine, but it's a play you expect a competent outfielder to make. He leaps, and because of his well-known diminutive stature, it looks a little funny, him flailing at that fly ball. It was a tough look. And that's the potential unintended consequence of putting him out there. He's your franchise legend. And he's out there flopping around trying to make a play on a fly ball. Thankfully, it's spring, but that was on Space City Home Network, so people got to see it. It's unfortunate that that particular play was one that people did get to see, not on some grainy footage that one of the beat writers is filming from the press box. It was in HD.
HD.
For everyone to see.
Todd Callis on the call.
Yeah, it's all the things.
I think he dropped an oh no.
Yeah. Yes. And would he have dropped an oh no if it was a random minor league, a guy in a minor league deal? Probably not.
DeZinzo doesn't get an oh no.
He doesn't get an oh no. But because Altuve is who he is, he gets an oh no, not Jose. Because no one wants bad things to happen for him. Not anyone who's reasonable. I'm sure they're Yankee fans, whatever, Dodger fans who will enjoy it. But for us, we're like, no, I'd rather have him commit an error at second than watch what happened yesterday. I don't want that to be. I don't think it'll be the norm, but I don't even want to see it at all. Like, if he dives and misses the ball, okay, that's an effort thing. But a play you expect an outfielder to make and he misses it, I need that to be – we set an over-under on missed dives earlier. What about misplays in left that you would say, okay, even Yordan, who's not known to be a great defensive outfielder, makes a play? How many – that's one. The spring training doesn't really count. Mm-hmm. But regular season-wise, if we're talking about misplays, do we get to three or four? Do we get – particularly like that, where he's going back on the ball. That should be a play made. He leaps up. He's not even close. He's like, what, 2 feet to the left? Was it about 2 feet to the
left? Yeah, it like land – when he jumped, he jumps and he almost lands by the time the ball actually gets to where his glove would have been if he never jumped. And it kind of hits him, like, on the back, it looks like. Or it's on the back side of him. Maybe it hits his butt a little bit. So it's probably, like, a foot. He's probably, like, a foot off.
Okay. I'm looking at it right now. Arrighetti was on the mound. Yeah, he mistimes his leap. He
didn't have to jump.
No, yeah. He thought he might have to make a play. Not that he's ever going to jump over a wall and make a play. But it looks like it's one of the jumps you think, okay, this ball might hit the wall. It doesn't. It's probably about half a foot off. He misses it.
And like a foot inside the fence.
Yes.
Too.
Yes.
Maybe more than a foot.
He could, instead of jumping, he could have put his hand out, touched the wall, got back on it quicker. There are a lot of things that an outfielder who knows what to do would have done make that play.
This is where I come in as an embarrassment consultant, Sean Mapes.
Okay.
Jose, love what you've done for this team. Love that you're doing this. A lot of guys wouldn't be open to
moving. Yes, they'd say, no, I'm playing second base. We know a guy. I play third.
Yes.
He could have said, I play second. That's what I do. But I'm going out there to play.
Appreciate that. Love it. All the memories. We can't jump. No jumping. Yeah. Don't leave your feet.
Yeah.
If at any point you leave your feet in the outfield this season, something has gone terribly wrong. I think that goes into my, don't make any bloopers. It's just, hey, if that one, he just like played off the wall, if he got in the position where, okay, it's going to hit off the wall, let me, turn about face and see where it's going to hit the wall. And I think some of us might have been, could he have made a play on that? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't even get like tweeted out and doesn't pick up a ton of steam. That's what you need to do. And that's also, not the same effect because it's probably a double instead of a triple. But it's like the same effect. It's still bad outfielding, but it's like not something that gets retweeted like 3,000 times.
I prefer it look like a glitch in MLB The Show where the outfielder's frozen.
Yeah, where you're like, my guy won't
move, as opposed to he jumps. I hope it's not the first of several. I hope it's like the first of like a couple. Let's minimize it to I don't get to like the third finger on my head. A couple misplays is fine. That happens.
And you're very optimistic about this.
I said I hope.
He's going to – okay. I was going to say he's going to play 120 at these things.
I said I'm hope. That's why I'm hoping.
One at every 10 games.
I don't want it to be a thing is what I'm saying. Okay. I don't want it to be people holding their breath when he goes back on the ball.
Okay.
I'd rather have it be a surprise. Jose missed one. That's what I'm looking for.
To answer your question, the over-under I'd put at like 9.5. He's going to play 100 games in the outfield.
But nine? He's in left field.
That's every
How many opportunities does he have for that type
games.
Of play?
Every 10 games.
You are almost suggesting, every 10 games, but how many plays would he even be involved in that would require this type of
misplay? He made it five spring training games before he got to one?
And he doesn't even play all the whole game all the time either.
it's just going to happen. I don't know if it's gonna be this.
He won't be playing at this time of day all the time. The sun's up there.
Again, embarrassment control to Sean Mapes. You gotta act like you didn't see the ball. You gotta act like
I don't want any of this.
Because it doesn't matter how good of a fielder you are if the sun is in your eyes. Okay?
That's true. You can't control the sun.
No one's gonna be like, this guy's a bad fielder. The sun's in his eyes.
Man,
people are gonna be like, this guy's a bad fielder. What the hell was he jumping for? Why did he jump when he jumped?
But
this guy stinks.
The problem is with your line of what you want to happen is, man, the sun's in his eyes a lot. People are going to notice, wow, the sun is always in his eyes.
It's 9 p.m. in Anaheim.
I couldn't see. The lights. Then it's the lights.
Yeah.
The lights.
It's Astros after dark.
Yeah, it's always the lights. It's either the sun or the lights. You got something to blame
Boom.
It on. Altuve needs better glasses. Gooder, get on it. Get Altuve some glasses.
Do you think this mentality that we have kind of shows why Jose Altuve is one of the greatest baseball players in all time?
Some
and why
people,
we're always looking for the excuse to make for like, oh, I didn't do it.
I'm not doing the sun in his eyes excuse. I just hope it doesn't happen. I'm not saying, hey, Altuve, play it off like something happened, then you couldn't get to the ball.
I'm sorry, that's what
you're doing.
I'm sorry to rope you in on that.
Yeah,
do you think that's why I'm not a good
I can't speak to why you are where you are. I'm just saying. It's not my attitude about it. I would just rather him not be in this position. And if he has to be there because he's a great teammate and a great Astro, he gets fast forwarded in his abilities to handle the outfield like a normal left fielder. I don't think it's too much to ask, but maybe it will be. As you astutely pointed out, he's played a handful of these. He doesn't even play all 9 innings in some of them.
And he had a game where nothing was hit to him.
Yes.
So he's had the, like, hey, some days it's going to be easy.
And then the one day where it should have been easy.
On TV, too. Man, that sucks.
And it's not like they carry every game. It just happened to be a game they carried.
God.
And I'm sure they were very excited. Altuve and left, Cam Smith and right.
It was basically like the starting lineup, except for I think Yiner was out.
And Arrigetti's pitching Yiner still. Well, he's coming off an illness.
Yeah.
And Space City Home Network got everything they wanted except for this. It's not as bad as Blair Henley starting with his family in attendance and being terrible, but...
In a game they won, by the way.
Yes.
No thanks to Blair Henley.
No thanks to him.
They did win.
But they did win that game because the Rangers were even worse that day. But in this case, we got our first... Oh, man. That sucks for Jose.
Not top 10. God.
I said it. If MLB Network had a Shaq No Fool segment, this one would have made it. Make it more entertaining.
Yeah, have...
Robert
Mark
Flores,
DeRosa,
I know you guys take that stuff seriously. Well, let's have some fun, but not at Altuve's expense.
Yeah, hire Manny Ramirez to do one segment a week.
Is Manny Ramirez a comp for Shaq? The baseball comp for Shaq?
I don't know. Maybe just outfield gaffes had me thinking about Manny Ramirez.
That makes some sense. But we got one. It's in spring. Let's learn from it. Let's not jump anymore.
No jumping. Just don't jump.
Get back to the wall. Feel it.
You don't want to get posterized. Just give up the dunk.
Every fly ball is Anthony Edwards to Altuve. Just get out of the way. Hey, man. I'd rather... Hey, the 2 points were coming either way, right?
Wait, it's Aaron Holiday trying to lay up? All right, block.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's a Min Thompson?
What's the Aaron Holiday version of a high fly ball? That's what Altuve needs to go make plays on.
Yeah.
Not when Anthony Edwards is
not
coming down
Jalen
the lane.
Not the Jalen Greens.
Nope.
Nope.
If Duncan Robinson's coming down the lane, make a play.
Even Duncan Robinson's like, why would I be doing that?
True. All right, we'll wrap up hour one there. With that, we'll have Lou Ferrigno when we come back. He's in the building. We'll talk to Lou. I'm interested to see what his favorite title is. Like people say, he was a Hulk. He was a champion bodybuilder. What's the thing that he, when he hears it, goes,
wants
yeah,
to inter-
that's the one he loves. Yeah. That's the one he loves to hear. All right, we'll talk to him when we come back.
But first, I want to talk to you about Prize Picks, America's number one daily fantasy sports app. And March is here. It's the perfect time to play because you got, like we were talking about last segment, you got spring training baseball. They don't have errors. They don't have a projection for errors for Jose Altuve in left field, but they have projections for different players in spring training games. They have season-long baseball projections, if that's something you're interested in, especially as we get closer inside 2 weeks of opening day. But obviously got professional basketball on at night during the days. We got college conference tournaments, and you can mix and match those lineups. So if you were impressed by Texas basketball's gritty win yesterday against Texas A&M, and you like Tremont Mark to have more than 10.5 points and assists, the game really turned when Rodney Terry put the ball in Tremont Mark's hands. Maybe they lean into that again, and he gets more than 10.5 points plus assists. And then with the nightcap, you can go with the Rockets playing the Dallas Mavericks. Jabari Smith to score more than or had to make more than 2 or 1.5 three-pointers. If you think he's going to make 2 three-pointers, you can get in on that. You also have combo projections, so Jalen Green and Klay Thompson to make more than 6 combined three-pointers. You can get on that on Prize Picks. Download the Prize Picks app today. Use promo code MAPES when you sign up to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. That's promo code MAPES on Prize Picks. Get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. You don't even have to win to get that money. It's guaranteed. Prize Picks, run your game.